I talk about this still with my mom to this day. It is devastating to not be an athlete anymore. They don't talk about it enough. They don't prepare you enough when you are in those 4 years of being an athlete. They try, hey, maybe really start focusing on your career, but you're just like tunnel vision. You love something so much and you're good at it, and that's what drives you every single day. I remember my final game and I was excited, but then I was not anticipating the sadness and the depression that would hit me for the months to come. I remember sitting in the corner of my room just crying because I was like, I don't know what I'm gonna do with my life now. I feel like I had lost the first love of my life. It's just gone. What hit me the hardest when things ended for softball is, okay, what's over? I don't have any control of it. What can I control now? How can I progress forward with my life? Softball is not who I am. It was what I did. My name's Kelly Chapman and I'm orthopedic surgery physician assistant, and I am undone.
Hey friend, I am glad you're here. Welcome to another episode of Becoming Undone, the podcast for those who dare bravely, risk mightily, and grow relentlessly. I'm Toby Brooks, a speaker, author, and professor. Over the past 2 decades, I've worked as an athletic trainer and a strength coach, and over the years, I've grown more and more fascinated with what sets high achievers apart and how failures that suck in the moment can end up being exactly the spark we needed to launch us on our path to success. Each week on Becoming Undone, I invite new guests to examine how high achievers can transform from falling apart to falling into place. If this is your first episode, you picked a good one. Not only was Kelly Chapman an absolute stud of an athlete during her playing days, her resilience and commitment toward first seeing, then materializing her dreams is absolutely remarkable. I hope you love it, and I hope you'll enjoy her story and her show enough to decide to get inspired by other high achievers who didn't let failure stand in the way of eventual victory. If you're a regular, am I ever thankful for you? This journey hasn't been easy, and there were times I wanted to quit, but you inspired and encouraged me. So for real, thanks. I'd like to emphasize that this show is entirely separate from my role as a professor, but it's my attempt to apply what I've learned and what I'm learning, and to share with others about the mindsets of high achievers. For Kelly Henderson Chapman, early successes as an all-state softball player turned into a scholarship at nearby University of Northern Colorado. After a stellar collegiate career, she found herself uncertain about her future, but drawn to a career in athletic healthcare. After completing her master's degree and working for a few years as an athletic trainer, she decided she wanted more and set off on a quest to become a physician assistant. With most PA programs drawing thousands of applicants for only a handful of spots, her first year she didn't get so much as an interview. However, she stayed the course and eventually found herself at Colorado Mesa University. Now a board-certified physician assistant with Parkview Medical Center in Pueblo, Colorado, today she finds herself still running down those dreams the same way she always has, with vision, tenacity, and commitment to seeing things through. I hope you'll enjoy my conversation with the incredible Kelly Chapman in episode 67, Control. This one's been a long time coming, folks, whether it was schedules or illness or whatever, but I'm super excited to have Kelly Chapman in-house today. Kelly, thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Brooks. It's an honor.
It still amazes me that I have students from a decade ago and they still call me Dr. Brooks. We're colleagues now. And if anything, I could work for you these days. You're an orthopedic PA and a storied career as an athlete. So I'm really looking forward to digging in and hearing your story, because I know it wasn't all just storybook endings and it didn't always go according to plan. But there's strength in that. There's power in that. So I'm looking forward to hearing you tell your story. So I always start with a little bit of an easy one. What did you want to be growing up and why?
First off, I do want to thank you for being on here. You are a mentor to me, and you are one of the many reasons of where I am today. And you just shaped me into who I am, and you are a big part of that. Thanks. Growing up, I don't know. I didn't know who I wanted to be, if I'm being honest. I was thinking about that when I was preparing for the show, and you had those questions that you sent us, and I'm like, growing up, I really didn't have an idea of who I wanted to be. I knew that my parents started me early in sports and being outside. Growing up in Colorado, it's like taboo if you're inside. We have great weather all year round. We have snow, and it was always go outside, be with your brothers, be involved in something outdoors. So they got me introduced into softball when I was 5 years old. I also did track and basketball, but softball seemed to be the sport that really stuck with me. And that's what I knew. That's what I wanted to do my whole life. And it sounds silly, but I was good at it and I loved it. And I wanted to be a softball player my whole life, which,
yeah,
you know, knowing now is a little unrealistic, but.
Yeah, our paths first crossed at Texas Tech, where you came to study athletic training. But prior to that, you were a highly successful athlete. According to my research, you were all state for the Cherry Creek Bruins, two straight state semifinal appearances, and you go to the University of Northern Colorado, where you're a mainstay. So talk me through those formative experiences and maybe the recruitment process. You stayed fairly close to home. What were those opportunities and what were those dreams like for young Kelly in high school?
It truly was a dream. We were very successful. We were only one of two sports at my high school that had never won a state championship. So talk about some pressure, but we did make it to the semifinals twice, unfortunately. Never took home that state championship, but it was an experience. And like I said, it was a love for me. It was easy to go to practice. It was easy to be a student and then just know that I was going to practice after school. It was easy for me to practice on the weekends. I didn't have a lot of friends in high school because I was always traveling and playing softball, but it didn't seem like work to me. It didn't seem hard to me. It was just something that I loved so deeply. And I consider myself lucky because I feel like I had good success early in my life. And that was with softball. And I had a deep passion for it. And so it was easy to play softball. But there were so many characteristics that I learned through high school and through college that made me who I was. You don't just make it through on talent alone. You have to work hard. You have to practice. And so those are things that I learned in high school and then continued on to college. It's just what I loved. And in college, where I peaked in my life at the time was my senior year of college. I was conference player of the year. And it was a unanimous decision by the conference. And that, I feel like that was my peak in life. And then from there is where things unraveled. But I learned so many things in college, how to be resilient, how to work hard. Our workouts were ridiculous, but you get a camaraderie that you have with your teammates. And I met some of my greatest friends, some of my best friends there who become your family. I think softball in general gave me the characteristics in who I am today.
Yeah. A lot of former athletes have talked about how disorienting it was when sport was suddenly over with. The regimented schedule, being told by a coach or a strength staff or whomever, academic, where to be, when to be, how to be, and then suddenly that's gone. And you realize pretty quickly whether or not those lessons stuck, whether or not you have the ability to do that for yourself. So that transition where our paths initially crossed, and I don't think until recently, I didn't give it enough credit that how difficult it can be on a young athlete to transition out of sport. Most of us in athletic training were former athletes at some point, and we all do it at some level, whether that's high school, college, or beyond. But for you, the last time you took that uniform off, whether that was your conference tournament or wherever that happened, talk me through the emotions and the thought process of Kelly, the softball player, to Kelly, the former athlete or softball player.
Oh, I talk about this still with my mom to this day. It is devastating to not be an athlete anymore. It really is. Like, they don't talk about it enough. They don't prepare you enough when you are in those 4 years of being an athlete. They try, hey, maybe really start focusing on your career, but you're just like tunnel vision. You love something so much and you're good at it. And that's what drives you every single day.
This right here is the razor that cuts the high achiever either way. As Kelly pointed out, many in the sports world, whether they be coaches, support staff like athletic trainers or strength coaches, academic support people, or just others, they do try. They try to ready athletes for life after sport. Some places do it better than others. But it's been said that you can't give two competing concerns your simultaneous, undivided attention. To focus heavily on life after sport would be to take away from life during sport. So Kelly did what most do. She focused on the present and made the most of her opportunities on the diamond. But when those days, and more importantly, that identity, were suddenly over, what was left was a gaping void that she didn't exactly know how to fill.
You wake up, you have early workouts, you go to class, you are on that, exactly, that regimen schedule. You have someone making all the workouts for you and really driving your day. And then I remember my final game and I was excited, but then I was not anticipating the sadness and the depression that would hit me for the months to come. I remember sitting in the corner of my room just crying because I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life now. I feel like I had lost the first love of my life. And that sounds cheesy, but it's so true. It's just gone. And for women, it's not something like, sure, if I was a male and I played baseball, I may have had more opportunities. But as a woman, there's some professional softball leagues and I could have gone overseas to play, but the opportunities are not there for softball. Mm-hmm. And so it was a train wreck. I was a mess, if I'm being honest. It is devastating. And I still think, even to this day, there is nothing that gives me the drive and the passion that softball gave me. When I go back to play for my alumni game, that adrenaline, even just playing for two innings, nothing compares to that love and to that drive. And so I don't think it's talked about enough. And it is sad, just because exactly what you said, you don't have someone there coaching you and driving your day. You have to figure it out for yourself again. And you learn how to be strong and resilient, how to work hard, when to show up on time, how to be accountable for yourself, how to be accountable for others. But who knows what to do next? And maybe it was my fault for being so tunnel vision, but like I said, that was my love. I didn't want to do anything else. So it really is hard. It took me a long time to get over that depression. And it's not even a hard depression where I couldn't function as a person, but it was definitely life-changing.
Yeah. And you really didn't have the luxury of being non-functioning very long, because you find yourself in Lubbock and you're in anatomy, maybe taking the hardest class of your life right away. Yes. And you're trying to process through this grief while at the same time, new city, no mm-hmm. community to speak of, mm-hmm. and academic challenges on a level you hadn't experienced before. Yes. So what was that transition like, moving from Greeley to Lubbock in the midst of all of these life changes?
Yeah, so I knew what there was one thing that did pique my interest when I was in undergrad, and that was my anatomy and physiology class. And I knew I had to run with that during the reflection time of being in between Greeley and Lubbock. And that's when I applied to Texas Tech. And it was the only school I applied to. And I told myself, if I get in, then I'm going, because that's going to be my leap of faith. That's going to be where I'm supposed to go. I graduated in May, and I think I started out there the following year. So I had about a year off to prepare mentally, get ready for a new city. I didn't know anyone in. I knew one person. Never have been away from my family like that. And then, yeah, to start that gross anatomy class, that is a very challenging class. I'd been challenged academically, but really it was more I'd been challenged athletically in life. So I had to rework my mind and place my hard work into different areas of life. It wasn't so much athletic ability anymore. I had to start using my brain a little more and focus on, what am I going to do with my life? Yeah, that gross anatomy class, it was not an easy class to start. Mm-hmm. But again, just relating back to an athlete, you work hard, you are resilient, you put your head down, you work through it. And yeah, I think that's what got me there.
Yeah, there's a documentary that came out that Michael Phelps produced during COVID. I don't know if you've seen it or not, called The Weight of Gold. And he talks about how prevalent behavioral mental health issues and depression in particular are for athletes following an Olympic Games. And it's really written from the perspective of Olympic athletes. But I think there's definitely connections that any athlete could make to that. And within it, he makes mention of the fact that there's a stigma associated with talking about feelings and acknowledging depression, that dark season you found yourself in. You've been programmed all this time as an aspiring D1 athlete to be tough, to be gritty, to push through. And any sign of depression is interpreted as weakness, and weakness can be exploited. And, and they make mention of the fact that maybe second only to the military, the stigma surrounding athletes really talking about their emotions is it's damaging. And so for you in that season, you mentioned you were laser focused on the task at hand. But once that was over, talk me through that time period following and your identity. What did you latch on to get through that season?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think you just have to be confident in yourself and in your abilities. That I've made it through tough games. I've made it through tough workouts. I can make it through this tough period in my life. But you also have to rely on others, like your family, your support system. I think that's where I relied on most is probably my parents and my family, talking with them, because you're right, there is a stigma. We're so strong, you're athletic. It's taboo if you have feelings or weaknesses or depression, but it's real. And I don't know, thinking back, it was probably 9 years ago, 10 years ago, I worked as a waitress for a year, and that was just, I think, just to get me by for that time. I kept working out. I tried to stay physical. I tried to stay active, because really being physical is good for your brain and endorphins. And so I tried to keep some kind of regimen. But I did stumble. I, of course, was not doing the best things for myself probably during that year. And so Lubbock, I think, was that fresh restart in life. Okay, this is where I'm going to be now. Again, I have to shift my feelings and my goals. Really, it's probably about goals in life at that time.
Yeah. My son and I talk about this. He's a pitcher. He's going into a senior year of high school.
Yeah.
And he loves the mental aspect of being a pitcher. He's, I'm in control of the game. The tempo relies on me. So there's a mentality that's a little different in a pitcher than in a position player. And it's unique in baseball and softball. And as I'm seeing him contemplate, am I going to play in college? Am I not? Is this it? Is this my last season? That mentality is a bit of a double-edged sword, because control can be a real illusion. And spending your formative years all through high school as an all-state selection, college as an all-conference player of the year, you've got this notion that I'm in control. I dictate this. And then suddenly you realize that, like you said, there aren't opportunities for you. You aren't in control of the next level. What was that like to wrestle with maybe that mentality, the thing that had made you better than everybody else, now maybe is making it harder for you to move on to a healthy, happy life?
It's so true when you talk about that, because you are in control. You're in control of the game. You're in control of your mind. I think I still struggle with that lack of control. Even today, there's things, if I do not have control of it, it drives me crazy. But it's just so funny that you say that, because it's so true. But I think you just have to rewire your mind. There's a lot of things out of your control. And that's probably what hit me the hardest when things ended for softball is, okay, it's over. I don't have any control of it. What can I control now? How can I progress forward with my life? I want to be successful. Softball is not who I am. It was what I did. And so controlling that mental aspect of, okay, what's next?
Kelly sneaks this gem right across the corner of the zone. And I remember during the interview thinking, wow, I need to go back and unpack that some more. So now, even as I'm editing the show, it hits me again right between the eyes. Kelly says it, softball is not who I am, it's what I did. For so many of us, somewhere along the way, our identity gets all tangled up with our experiences. When the context for those experiences suddenly disappears, like when you're out of eligibility, or your career is cut short by injury, or any of a thousand things, it can be darn near impossible to disentangle them from one another. Where do I end and my sport or my art or my job end? If who Kelly was a softball player, then what was left when softball was taken away? Instead, her wisdom here is profound, and I believe it comes from a place of deep, heavy internal work. It's been forged both through tears and time. But with time, she's come to understand that softball wasn't who she was. It was what she did. And what was left was a young woman who knew how to make, chase, and capture her goals. She knew how to stick to a plan and how to build a team. And perhaps most importantly, for the seasons to come in life, how to pick herself up after a tough loss and bring the energy and the effort that it would take to try again and win.
I don't know what's next. And that's also a piece that you have no control over. But it was easy for me to practice and get good at something with softball. I could go out and throw 1,000 pitches, do 1,000 hits off the tee, and I would see progression in my activity and how I got better in softball. What do I do now? What do I have control over? I can't practice a career if I don't know where I'm going.
Yeah.
I can't practice something that I have no control over because there's nothing to practice. What do I practice? Mm-hmm. And so that lack of control is really hard. So I think, again, just recentering your goals and figuring out, okay, this isn't going this way anymore. What can I do now?
Yeah.
How can I control? It really is so much about your mind, because mm-hmm. I could have gone one of two ways, right? Like, I was in this horrible depression state right after softball, and I could have spiraled down and, I don't know, done nothing. But I knew I wanted to still be successful in life. And so just figuring out the controllables. I liked anatomy. Okay, so let's go from there. I can control that a little bit. So let's go to athletic training and then practice that, be great at it. At Texas Tech, I guess I had to get good at practicing academics, because in undergrad, I really only had about a 3.0, but then I went to Texas Tech, and I guess that's where my control came in. Let's get really good grades. Let's just do well in this area. Let's be the best at, like you were in softball, and we'll go from there. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. I think the thing I love the most about this show, especially the former students that I've had the privilege of getting interviewed just like you, is it helps close the circle. I think growth always requires, obviously it requires goal setting, and it requires pursuit in that direction. For you, it was practice and working out and eating right and doing those things. Okay, that's part of it. Then we see the evidence of that. Just like you mentioned, if you're hitting 1,000 balls off a tee or pitching mm-hmm. and hitting spots, you see that. Mm-hmm. But the last bit that I've not been great at over my career, and I feel like I'm getting better and I'm now recognizing the importance of it, is the reflection. Mm-hmm. What worked well, what didn't work well. Mm-hmm. And when I reflect on you and some other students that came in, I made a lot of assumptions about how you're a D1 athlete and you've got schedule ironed out. You're doing great academically. You've got a smile on your face. You're happy. You're well adjusted. Mm-hmm. You're succeeding. And in retrospect, I even think, oh, she was a softball player. As your clin ed coordinator, we put you with softball. I think you asked for it, but I can't recall.
Yeah.
And in retrospect, that might not have been the best choice, because I know for myself as a basketball player, I wanted to be an athletic trainer because I love the sport ethos. I love the team environment, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. being with basketball hurt a little too much.
Yeah,
it was too soon. And so I went to football. I'd never played. And so that was healthy for me. Mm-hmm. But you go from being a D1 athlete, the star of your conference, to sitting on the bench as an athletic trainer in a mm-hmm. D1 dugout. And in retrospect, as I reflect on that, that maybe wasn't so great. And you put on appearances of happiness and of well adjustment. But I think in retrospect, there were some red flags that I missed. Talk me through those 2 years in Lubbock and maybe what you were dealing with that no one knew, or maybe what I or someone else could have done that would have helped.
Yeah, reflecting back on it. I don't know. It was hard for me to work with softball, no doubt, but because I just wanted to go out there and pitch or play or even just practice or bring my glove and throw around with them. But I think that was my second year. So I think there became a little bit of maturity that second year and realizing, okay, this is their time. This is for them. I get to still be a part of it, but I am not the athlete anymore, which is devastating. It still is devastating. But that is why I went into athletic training, because I'm the same way. I love being around the team. I love the atmosphere, the environment that you get with a team that you really don't get, I don't think, anywhere in life. It was hard to be back with softball, yes, but I think it was worth it. And I think it was not a mistake, or I appreciate you putting me with them. But it was also a growing and reflection part. Okay, this is not you anymore. This is not the athlete. You are progressing in life. You are growing in life, and that's okay. Everyone has their time. Everyone has their moment. And so it may have been more of a little bit of a growth piece for me. Of course, I did try to put on the happiness face, and deep down, I was still struggling with being away from softball, but I didn't think I necessarily needed to be away from it as much as I wanted to be still in the game. Yeah. And people always ask me, why didn't you coach? I couldn't be a coach. I like being the athlete. I like being in and around the athletes, and not so much being like the dictator of the team, but just more being involved in the environment.
Yeah. You graduate from the MAT after 2 years, and I have to think that transition was much different than out of sport, because out of sport, there's really no path forward. It's over. It's that chapter's closed. But as a young professional, everything lays ahead. And so you've got opportunities to work, whether that's clinically or to leverage that as you've done and into a related credential. What was the thought process at or following graduation? What did you want to be when you grew up at that point in your life?
I still didn't really know. I don't think I liked athletic training, but I knew it was not going to be my final stop in life. So my goal, and reflecting back on the academic part, was get the best grades you can, because if you want to do something else, whether it be a physical therapist, that was my thought process. Maybe I'll become a physical therapist, but I really needed the grades to get into further education if that's what I wanted to do. But also in the meantime, you need experience. You have to work, get your feet wet and become a part of society. And I still didn't really know where I was going. And so I got a fantastic opportunity at South Plains College with Will. And you just take things in stride as an athlete. You don't know if you're going to get hurt. You don't know if you're going to win the game. You don't know who your opponent is, but you're flexible and you take each day and each game as it is and just give 100%. And so that's what I did with my career, South Plains College. Okay, here we go. This is where I'm going. But I do remember calling my mom and saying, I don't feel like this is where I should be at 25, and I want to be further along. I don't know what it is, and I'm frustrated still with life because I don't feel like I'm where I'm supposed to be. And that was three or four years after I was done being an athlete still. I still was like, I don't know what to do. Yeah. So it was, even though I was progressing in my life, I still felt like I'm lost.
Yeah. And again, it comes back to that lack of control. It's yes. One thing to know precisely where you're supposed to be or to have a vision. Like you wanted to be a D1 athlete. That's a goal you strive for. But to be in that position, it wasn't that you knew where you wanted to be. You just felt in your soul that this wasn't it. And that's hard. That is a lonely and a frightening place to live.
Yeah, it is, because like I said, in softball, that the love was there. You knew what you wanted to do. But then even still, 4 or 5 years later, as an athletic trainer, I'm like, okay, there's still nothing that gives me that adrenaline. There's nothing that gives me that love, that passion. And even though I liked athletic training, it didn't give me that feeling. And honestly, Dr. Brooks, I don't know if I will ever find that feeling again. But that's okay. I have to be fortunate that I had it once in life.
Yeah. So it was a storybook next move. You just magically decided you wanted to be a PA. You applied and you got straight in, right?
No.
No, it wasn't quite like that. So no. What happened next?
Actually, when I was at Texas Tech, someone had taught, I don't even remember. I think it was at Lubbock Sports Medicine, and I saw the PAs, and I was like, and so I remember when I was at Texas Tech doing research on physician assistants, and I was like, maybe this is what I'm supposed to do next. But holy moly, none of my prerequisites match. I have to take this GRE exam that shows nothing about who I am as a person. It's like the SAT on crack. And so it was a very difficult exam, and I never did well on it. But I was like, this doesn't show who I am or what I can do. And so it, again, I'm at this roadblock. Like, I want to keep going. I need to do something more in life. Athletic training is helping me, but it's not quenching my thirst. So with PA school, you get one chance each year. You apply in April. You find out May, June, July if you're getting interviews. And then you do your interviews. And then if you don't get in, then you have to wait another year. And so at that time, I had moved to Dallas, and I was working in a clinic as an athletic trainer, which I loved. You learn more casting. And then also, I was doing some contract work with just like local middle schools. So I was still getting field work. But it took me the first year, they always say, is a waste because you're just getting all of your information in and you get all of your recs in. And it was true. I didn't get a single interview my first year. And so then you just have to work on gaining more experience as an athletic trainer. They want you to volunteer 7,000 hours a week for PA school and just be this very diverse person. And so you have to really focus on becoming that person that looks good on paper, right? Because that's what they look at. They look at who you are on paper before they even will let you come out to talk to them, to show them who you are. In my second year, I got a couple interviews, but I was waitlisted, and then I ended up being denied. Again, each year you have to like regroup. You have to be, of course, there are plenty of times where I'm crying. This isn't going to work out. What do I do with my life? And so I relate it back to being an athlete. You have to be resilient. You have to keep going. I had to take organic chemistry, which I was horrible at. Because really, you also have to stay within 5 years with these prereqs. And so each year, there's another year that's gone by where your prereq might expire. So you really have to stay up to date on all this stuff. So I was taking classes. I would go to work and go to a night class, go home. But it just goes back to being flexible and being resilient.
Yeah. There's a quote, and I lost it. I used to have it handwritten in my notebook. It was from undergrad. I stumbled across it like in a Sports Illustrated, but it goes something like this. There's a fine line between an iron-willed persistence and a complete lack of self-awareness. I can watch all the David Goggins videos I want and believe in myself that I could be an NBA player with iron-willed persistence, but that shows a complete lack of self-awareness. I don't have what it takes to be an NBA basketball player. At some point, you have to think, try one, you knew to write that off. Try two, that's disappointing. Try three, is this in the cards for me? What did you tell yourself to keep going to rally the energy for one more push? Because I remember that season, you would contact me and say, hey, could you write a letter? And my heart broke for you because I knew exactly the person you were, the student, you were so well suited for that role. And I just felt like you weren't making it through the screening process for people to get to know who you were.
Yeah.
So what did you tell yourself to keep going to pursue that dream?
Honestly, Dr. Brooks, I think deep down, I knew I would get there. I knew I would get there. I just, because I had no, really, it's this or I don't know what I'm going to do, honestly. And at that time, that was the only option I had. And I just told myself, I know I can get there. I know I can do it. I have to keep trying. It will break through. I will get that chance. I'm getting closer. First year, I didn't get anything. Second year, I got interviews. Third year, yes, I'm going to get interviews. And I know I'm going to get there. But it was really hard. It is really hard to stay focused and not just... It's not that I never had breakdowns. I had plenty of breakdowns. What am I going to do with my life? But I knew deep down that it was going to work out. I don't know how, looking back, but I just kept going. And I got interviews. And I actually told myself, if I don't get in, I'm moving back to Colorado because I don't want to be in Texas anymore. I'll figure something out. But Colorado Mesa, it was their first year as a PA program, and all of my requisites matched. And so I was like, okay, this is, I had a gut feeling, said I really need to put all my eggs in this basket because I think this is where it's at. Mm. And I got an interview from them, and you can just tell all my other previous interviews, you're like, it went okay. I don't know if I got it. But the Colorado Mesa one, I was like, I nailed it. But you're just so confident. That day I woke up and you're just confident. It's just a different day. I guess maybe relating it back to a game. You feel confident. And so I really did do well on my interview. And I left there and I'm like, if I don't get in there, I don't know what they're asking for.
Yeah.
Which may sound very confident, but and so I had a couple other interviews that year, but they did not feel as good as Colorado Mesa. And so I was waitlisted with another school in North Carolina. And then I finally got the acceptance call from Colorado Mesa. And it was just like this overwhelming emotion. It's actually happening. It finally worked. But then also the other side of, oh my gosh, is this the right thing? This is so much money. PA school is not cheap. Am I doing the right thing? So it's, I just got in and I'm super excited. But then I also have this overwhelming emotion of, is this the right thing?
Right. One of my all-time favorite movies is Rudy, and he moves to South Bend and he starts off in a community college. He's not actually admitted to Notre Dame, and he applies. And it's like my most favorite scene in the entire movie where not a word is said, but he opens the letter and if he doesn't get in, they don't accept senior transfers. He knows if I don't get in now, I'm not getting in.
Yeah.
And he opens it and you just see him break down into tears. And as a viewer, the first time you're like, what's it say? Did you get in or did you not? And we know the story where he got in. And so that flood of emotions, that's human nature. And you touched on it already. At that point, like financial concerns aside, was that the confirmation, affirmation you needed that this was your path, this was your purpose in life?
Yeah, because I knew it was the next best step for me in my life. And that confirmation was like, yes, this is where you are supposed to go. So that confirmation definitely changed my life and my outlook on becoming a PA, and that I wasn't necessarily stuck anymore. Like I said, I love athletic training, but I almost felt stuck. Like there was not growth for me in where I was. And that's a control thing too. I need to grow. I need to practice. I need to get better at something. I need more. Becoming a PA, I was like, I can practice at that. I can become better. I can help people more. And I can, yes, getting that confirmation, I guess maybe it was more of a control piece. Like I finally made it. But the hard work was not done at that point.
Well, that's where I was going next, is getting in is a milestone, but it's by no means the finish line. It is, you're in the starting blocks now. Ooh, yeah. So what is the next few years like for Kelly?
I think I probably couldn't have done as well as in PA school if I didn't go to Texas Tech. I'll tell you that. My anatomy class at Texas Tech was better than at Colorado Mesa. It was a new program. They didn't have the funds really to get cadavers. So I was very lucky to have that class at Texas Tech. And it really did, I think, propel me into some of the success I had in PA school. But I took 120 credits in 27 months. And they're not easy classes because PA school is more general focused. It's not orthopedics. And I remember in the first couple months, I was like, wow, I know nothing about medicine. I know my little, on the boards exam for PA school, orthopedics is 5%, but it's tiny. And so I was like, I know nothing. And again, that's where you have to break yourself down, reset your goals, figure out what's the most important thing right now. You can't have a job. All you do is study. You go to class all day, every day. And yeah, those classes are very difficult, but it's so worth it. I had great teachers there too. I had great classmates. I was very fortunate to be a part of a cohort class and start something new. So by no means it was not easy, but again, it was worth it. And I could practice at it. And I knew if I read more, studied more, it would pay off. And that goes back to more pitching, more batting. You work at something and you progress. That's validity in itself. Mm-hmm. And that's what I needed.
Yep. Pitchers, you have an approach for every hitter and you hit your spots. And I love the corollary, the mental connections for pitchers. That's life. Like, you control what you can and you have to shake off what you can't. Maybe somebody got the best of you that at bat. Shake that off, because if you let that linger, they've already got the advantage the next time they see you.
Yeah.
What do your days look like today?
I passed my boards. That's a whole nother journey itself when you leave PA school, because when you apply everywhere, they want you to have experience. I don't have any experience. And so my first job, I'm still in my first job. My doc, I'm in Pueblo. I'm at Parkview Orthopedics, which is where I wanted to be. I still get to work with athletes. My doc is the team physician for the D2 college that we have here in town. So we still see all the athletes. I still get to incorporate that into my life, which is what I wanted. In PA school, people would always ask, what field of medicine do you want to go to? And I'd say 90% of my classmates, I don't know yet. My answer was always orthopedics, just because I still loved the sports aspect. And when I got out of school, my doc, God bless her, she gave me the opportunity because she had worked with athletic trainers. That's really what it was. She worked with all the athletic trainers at the college, and she knew my experience that I would bring to the table as an athletic trainer. As an athlete, she was a D1 soccer athlete at University of New Mexico. She saw that in me very early, and I cannot thank her enough for giving me the opportunity. She's an amazing doctor, an amazing person. And my days, we have clinic 3 days a week, and we're in surgery 2 or 3 days a week, depending on the week. And medicine is tough. Medicine is hard. You work with some really great people, but taking care of people is hard. I am very introverted, and every day I have to be an extrovert just to put on a show for patients and be there for them and really listen to their needs. And medicine is hard. It really is. It's just not orthopedics. It's people are sick. And so
you're not treating sprained ankles. You're treating patients with sprained ankles. And that's different.
It is. I remember when you first are out, you're like, oh my gosh, this is all on me. You have to know other medicines, what interacts with what and what they can and can't take. Do they have diabetes? But again, that with practice, you can get better at it. And that's why it's fulfilling for me.
Yeah. Ironic. I'm just thinking of it now that you're practicing medicine, and practice is exactly what you've relied on your whole life to get better. So,
yeah.
What advice would you give your younger self? This has been not always a smooth path and not always an easy journey. If you could go back in time and speak some life or encouragement into young Kelly, what would you tell her?
It's not going to be easy, but what you learn as a young woman will make you into who you are later in life. So just stay strong, stay with it. If you keep practicing and you work hard towards something, you can get it. It may not be the path that you think it is. It's not going to be straight across. There's a lot of up and downs. There's a lot of mental breakdowns. But you know who you are, and you just have to keep going at the end of the day. It's a hard battle, but nobody's battle is easy. Just keep going. Just be resilient. You have to be resilient.
I'm now closing in on 70 episodes. So this is like a huge qualitative research project for me, if I'm really nerdily honest about it. And probably the most encouraging thing is that people I admire what you've done, and I admire what so many of my guests have accomplished. And I think for so many of us, we just assume that if someone did it, it came easy for them. I'm defective. I'm deficient. Right. I am lacking. I'm not like them. And to hear high achievers talk about how they thought the same thing, we normalized the fact that everybody struggles with doubt. Everybody struggles with uncertainty. And there may be moments where you feel invincible. Like you might have had a few innings where you stepped in that circle knowing darn good and well you were going to dominate.
Yeah.
But we spend a lot of other innings in our life hoping we can get through this inning to the next. And it's in those seasons of doubt, if we can be resilient and push through, that makes us human. Yeah. And there's strength in knowing that I'm not alone in those doubts.
Yeah. I remember someone telling me, as a batter in softball, you are always failing. If you're batting 300, you are 3 out of 10. That is failing. But that's a good average. In 333, 400, you're doing well. So it's all about perspective, too. Like you said, there are many times of doubt, but you do have to keep going and just be resilient.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so we're closing in here. I love music and the emotions that it can oftentimes convey. My daughter's made me a reluctant adopter of musical theater, and she said that the people don't spontaneously break into song and dance, but the point of the songs and musicals is that they're allowing someone to share their emotions with you in a way that spoken words can't. And I thought, that's cool. That's pretty powerful. So a question I ask of every guest is, if you could watch a montage of your life, what song would you choose to play in the background and why?
Oh gosh. I probably will always relate it to one of my walk-up songs in softball, and that's just the Sandstorm song. There's not many words to it. It's just like a high beat energy, and I still listen to it when I work out just because it just drives you. It's just a high intensity. You just, every time I work out and I listen to it, I can work out harder. And so I think I'll probably relate it back to that just because it was my walk-up song for 2 years, and I still listen to it, and like I said, even though there's no words, it's just an upbeat song that keeps you going.
It's also fitting. You spent 2 years in Lubbock. We have our share of sandstorms.
Well, that's true.
You didn't think of that connection. What for Kelly Chapman remains undone?
I don't know. It sounds crazy. I have had a lot of success in my life, and I love being an orthopedic PA, but I still feel like there's something that's missing in my life. I don't know what it is. There's still something that I haven't attained yet. And again, I don't know what that is, but, and it may take me to get to where I am right now. I looked back and it probably took me about 10 years to get from high elite level softball athlete to orthopedic PA. It took me about 10 years. So if it takes me another 10 years, that's fine. If it takes me 20, but I still feel like there's something deep down inside of me that's been unattained. I don't know what it is, but I will find it.
I can certainly relate to that. I think growth-minded folks have this need to continue to actualize, to continue to grow, to morph into. Taylor Swift talks about her eras. I don't know what your next era is, but we'll wait with anticipation to see what that is.
Yeah.
How can listeners connect with you and follow what you do?
I have an Instagram, but I'm not very active on it. You can always follow Parkview Orthopedics.
Sounds like the beginnings of a fantastic women's athlete clinic outreach.
Well, you know, my
D1 athletes all over.
Yeah, my doc and I were just talking in the OR the other day. She thought it would be cool to start her own podcast because I was telling her I was doing this one. And she was like, I'd love to interview some of the CSU Pueblo athletes and maybe even some of my patients. And we are an all-female orthopedic team. And so she had brought that up in a female podcast. So who knows?
Yeah. There you go. Hook her up. Let her know. It sounds like she would make for another good episode. I'd love to
awesome.
Team you all together.
Yeah, she's great.
Well, very cool. Kelly, thank you so much for joining me. I apologize for the scheduling issues we had, but this was well worth the wait. I certainly appreciate your time.
Well, I appreciate you and all that you do, and I'm eager to listen to all your future episodes. My name is Kelly Chapman, and I'm orthopedic surgery physician assistant, and I am undone.
For Kelly, it hasn't come easily, but she never asked for it to.
From her days as an All-State selection in high school to her crowning athletic achievement, at least so far, to being the unanimous pick as the D1 Pacific Coast Softball Conference Mountain Division Player of the Year in 2011 as a softball player, all the way to graduate studies and experiences as both an athletic trainer and a physician assistant, she's never been willing or interested in taking shortcuts. Just like her playing days taught her, one setback doesn't have to mean the end. Many times, it was the lessons learned in those temporary setbacks that paved the way for a thrilling victory later. I'm thankful to Kelly for dropping in today, and I hope you found just as much encouragement and inspiration from her story as I did. For more info on today's episode, be sure to check it out on the web. Simply go to undonepodcast.com/EP67 to see the notes, links, and images related to today's guest, Kelly Henderson Chapman. I know there are great stories out there to be told, and I'm always on the lookout. So if you or someone you know has a story that we can all be inspired by, tell me about it. Surf on over to undonepodcast.com, click the contact tab in the top menu, and drop me a note. Coming up, I'm working hard to close out the year and hit my goal of 75 episodes and 5,000 organic downloads in year one. So I've still got some work to do, but I've lined up some fantastic guests to try and help me hit the mark. First, I've got former Wall Street Journal journalist and now author and historian John Miller. I'll also have physical therapy educator and entrepreneur F. Scott Feel, as well as the founder of Digital Marketer, entrepreneur Mark DeGrasse. So stay tuned. This and more on Becoming Undone. Becoming Undone is a Nitro Hype creative production written and produced by me, Toby Brooks. If you or someone you know has a story of resilience and victory to share for Becoming Undone, contact me at undonepodcast.com. Follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Becoming Undone Pod. And follow me at Toby J. Brooks on Twitter, X, Instagram, and TikTok. Listen, subscribe, and leave me a review at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, everybody, keep getting better. I'm Toby Brooks, a speaker, coffer, and professor.